I'm Peter Mansbridge, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Through drought and famine, natural disasters, my baby has been around for me. Kingdoms have fallen, angels be calling, none of that could ever make me leave. Yeah, every time I look into your eyes, I
Oh, man.
What?
I really wanted to catch that football game, but I have to clean my room. I'm so bummed.
Yo, man, totally chill out. You can catch it on CITR.
CITR?
Did someone say CITR?
Yeah.
CITR Radio brings you Thunderbird Sports on the weekends. Catch all the action and don't miss a moment of play with our live play-by-play and color commentary. Only on CITR 101.9 FM.
Wow,
that's great.
And if you can't catch the game, tune in at 3:30 p.m. every Thursday for our weekly update on UBC Athletics with live scores, recaps, and in-depth analysis.
Oh, okay, dude. Okay, dude. We get it.
Dude.
Only on CITR.
When are we two, and when are we more? How does intimacy become belief? How does a mood return? How is the way home?
Just for laughs.
Just for laughs presents the Alternative Comedy Tour.
We gotta get out of here!
Featuring star of Silicon Valley, Deadpool, and everything else you like, TJ Miller.
Yeah, I was the star of Yogi Bear 3D, but I don't need to get into that.
With special guest, Flight of the Conchords, Rhys Darby.
I probably shouldn't be doing this. It's a risk.
And hosted by Nick Vatterott. The Just for Laughs Alternative Comedy Tour at the Vogue Theater, November 17th. On sale now at Ticketfly.com. For details, check Metro News or go to hahaha.com/alternative.
This has been a message from Just for Laughs Alternative Comedy Tour.
Dave Radio, Fridays at noon on CITR.
Wow, wow, Dave, you're so sway. Oh, Dave, I like your shave.
And we're the Daves. I'm David Bedanik.
I'm Dave Campbell.
I'm Dave Frank.
We're the Daves.
And you're listening to CITR FM 101.9.
CITR Radio.
And these are the Daves of our lives.
It is Friday, the 6th of October, 2017, and this is Dave Radio with Radio Dave on the radio. We're broadcasting live on CITR 101.9 FM and streaming on the World Wide Web at CITR.ca from our studios underlooking the agora of the palatial Student Nest on the Musqueam territory of Ulksan, better known to you as the Point Grey campus of the University of British Columbia. On the program today, we meet a national treasure, Alanis Obobsawin, who has been making documentaries about the experiences of First Nations people for 50 years. Her 50th film is showing at the Vancouver International Film Festival. We'll meet her and Toronto filmmaker Charles Officer, who also has a film at VIFF, and we'll hear from them later this hour. We'll also hear from William B. Davis, director of Homeward Bound, which is opening tonight at the PAL. But first, playwright Scott Button and actor Patrick Donner here to talk about Enigma Theater's production of Viva. Plus, if we have time, the usual call board and some local music. It's Vancouver's go-to hour for local independent theater, film, and music, and it starts right now. Now, before we start, I have to explain something. If you're listening on the 6th of October, you wouldn't have heard anything weird. But if you're listening on the 13th of October, you're going, what? It's not the 6th, it's the 13th. What's going on is that I'm going to be away next week. And so rather than try to put together a separate show for next week, there's so much good stuff in this show that we're just going to repeat it. So we'll just pretend like we're talking about today as the 6th, but also remember that today could also be the 13th. So that being said, let's introduce our guests. Scott Button. I say hi, Scott.
Hello. Hello.
And Patrick Dodd. Hi.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good. I'm going to move your mic so it's like that, because you're a tall guy.
All right.
There we are. All right. So, Scott, you're the writer. Patrick, you're one of the actors of Viva.
That's right.
You're the writer. Scott, tell us about Viva.
Well, Viva is a new play. It's being done at the Havana Theater by Enigma Theater and Bright Young Theater. And I wrote it a couple of years ago after a trip to Vegas that I took to my husband, to Las Vegas. And once when I went there, I knew I would have to write something about the city because it is such a fascinating place. And there's so many, I had so many different feelings about being there. Like, I loved it, and it was hedonistic, and it was great. And then there are elements that were, of course, very unsavory, as I'm sure people imagine.
Yeah, it just sort of hit you home all of a sudden, didn't it, with the massacre last week?
It did. Yeah. We've been thinking and talking about that a lot. In fact, our first two preview performances are by donation, and all the box office revenue is going to the Brady campaign to end gun violence in the U.S. and the Red Cross to benefit victims of the shooting. So, Great. Yeah, we've been thinking about it a lot.
I bet you have. But, of course, that wasn't in mind when you wrote the play.
So tell us
a little bit about the play itself.
Yeah. So it's about two people. It's a two-hander play, two actors. It follows Alice, who's a woman in her late 20s, and she's gone to Vegas. It's a sort of magic realism play. Like, it's quite fantastical in a way. So Alice has gone to Vegas to secure an organ on the black market to save her brother. And then along the way, she meets Graham, who Patrick plays. And Graham's sort of there. He's there to kind of party. Like, his friends just graduated university, and he's sort of there just to kind of have fun. But then he runs into something which reminds him of his past. And he has quite a haunted, storied past, as you can imagine.
Yeah, I imagine. So, Patrick, you're playing Graham. So,
I am.
Yeah. So how was that experience?
Well, it hasn't started yet in terms of the actual production, but rehearsals have been great. I really like working with Tanya, who's the director of the show.
I wanted to mention Tanya because I only know her as a stage manager. She's run a couple of shows that I've been in. So what's Tanya like as a director?
She's very demanding. She asks a lot of her actors, which is what I really like about her, is she really pushes me. I've worked with her before, actually, last summer. In a production of a play called Red. She was the first director who really pushed me outside my comfort zone and forced me to really dig into every single line in the play and make it mean something to you.
Was there anything that you came across where you just said, no, I don't want to do that?
No, I mean, some things are hard to...
Well, I didn't mean that you blocked it completely, but just that was your initial impression and you maybe found a way to get there.
Yeah, I think as an actor, you can get very sort of protective of your craft and your own way of approaching it. So when someone asks you to do something that you weren't thinking of doing, you can have a bit of a gut reaction against it. but usually I'm so willing to put my confidence in other people as opposed to myself that I'm willing to move past that.
Yeah, and you're both doing multiple characters.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about some of those other characters.
Well, they're sort of they're smaller characters that sort of pass in and out of the story as it goes, and they're not. They're almost more like figments, or we're calling them specters, because they just sort of they come in and interact with the other character briefly, and just sort of arc the story a little bit. But they're not like these super fleshed out characters.
No, but they just sort of find their way in through. But like in terms of finding sort of an individuality for each of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's been interesting because it's mostly sort of almost like a superficial individuality as far as it goes for me for performing them, because I'm just trying to distinguish each one. Without being campy or over the top, trying to find a voice and a physicality for each one. And fortunately, I have a strong background in improv, which uses a lot of physicality and voice work. So I've really enjoyed that process.
Yeah, because sometimes that's all it takes is just a slight change in posture or gait or.
It's true, and that can sort of a change in posture can even can change the way you're thinking.
Yeah,
which allows you to you know, embrace another character.
Yeah, so Scott. How long have you been writing plays?
I've been writing plays for, I guess, 5 years now. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really got my real start when I did the Arts Club's Leap Playwriting Intensive. Mm-hmm. And I wrote a full-length play there. And then, so that play, which was called The Hunger Room, that ended up actually getting produced last year. Earlier this year, last May, at the PAL Studio Theater. And so since then, I've wrote like a couple of like shorter plays. One of the short plays I wrote called Desiree is a monologue for a woman, which is about 15 minutes. And it was presented at something called the Pole Festival.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually just got published. The Pole Festival just published an anthology of plays that they've done over the years of their
festival. We're great supporters of the Pool Festival here.
It's a
terrific thing.
It's terrific. Yeah. There's so much good work that comes out of there, and they're such a scrappy, great young company. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it.
And have you written anything that Enigma has done before?
No, I've never written anything that Enigma has done. I've had a relationship with Tanya because I was in a show that she directed for the Fringe Festival, The Zoo Story. In, I think, 2014 that was. And she's a good friend of mine. And so I was always a fan of her work. And
I think this is the first time that Enigma's doing a new play.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations on being the first.
Thank you. It's very exciting. And it's a great team. Like, Tanya's a great director for it. Mm-hmm. And Patrick is, of course, fantastic. And the other actor, Melanie Riche.
Yeah, let's talk about Melanie. She's not here, so we're not
kidding. Yeah. Well, Mel is great. I went to school with her. We both went to UBC. Mm-hmm. Both did the BFA in acting program. And she
that's always acting. Important to note when you're on the UBC radio station.
UBC as much as possible. But Mel's great. She's been acting, and she's also an educator, and she's got a background as a dancer, which I think you can see in the show as well. With the way she's able to move. She's great.
Mm-hmm.
Can't say enough nice things about her.
All right. Well, I'm sure she'll be pleased about that. Mm-hmm. So once again, let's have the dates and locations. It's at the Havana, right?
That's right.
And it opens on Thursday the 12th, which is either next week or last night.
Yeah, that's whenever this is coming to
you. But when does it run till?
Those are the previews, the Thursday the 12th and the 13th.
Okay.
And then the official opening night is on Saturday the 14th. The gala, the big gala.
All right.
And then it runs till Sunday the 23rd.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's just a week, but...
just a week.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's about 85 minutes, so you'll be home by 9:30.
Yeah, it's always important.
Or home by 10, I should say.
That's a very...
That's what I always, out of the theater.
That's what I look for in my theater production.
Yeah.
Am I going to get home early? Will the buses still be running?
I'll sit through anything as long as I'm home by 10.
Yeah. It doesn't matter how good or bad it is. Yeah.
And how do people get tickets?
They can get them online at a website called Theater Wire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or just look for our Facebook event, Enigma Theater and Bright Young Theater present Viva, and there will be a link there.
Great. And if you want to know more, Theater Wire has a great interview with Tanya, which we have shared on the Dave Radio Facebook page too, so you can check that out as well. So I'd love to sit and chat with you guys more, but we have a chock full show today, so I got to move on. But thank you both for coming in.
Happy Friday the 13th.
Yes!
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, we're going to take a quick musical break. This is one of our favorite local performers, The Land of Deborah.
You left me on a corner in the rain. You had two umbrellas, you gave mine away. What kind of a person does that to the one that they love? Seems my love wasn't good enough. Smoked. I wished I had a light, 'cause you were the one, the lantern that lit up my life. And now I've gone blind. Now I'm blind. Remember your name, but one thing I know for sure, I'm alone again. Alone again. I cried on the night bus, then slept. And when I awoke, I knew I was a mess. When the driver said, sweetheart, you should go home, get some rest. Tomorrow I'll be better, I'll bet. Remember your name, but one thing I know for sure, I'm alone again. I'm alone again. I didn't know, I didn't see the signs that our time had run out. We disappeared like tears through rain. So now I'll go and lick my wounds again. There's just never enough, and one day I'll find that someone who'll love me true. It just wasn't you. It wasn't you. I guess that I'm numb, I think I'm in shock, don't even remember your name. But one thing I know for sure, I'm alone. Again.
Up at the PAL Studio Theater starting tonight, October the 6th, is a play by Elliot Hayes. It's called Homeward Bound. It's a production of Western Gold Theater, and it's directed by Vancouver's favorite William B. Davis. And I had an opportunity to sit down with Mr. Davis and talk about the play.
Homeward Bound is a play by Elliot Hayes. It's a Canadian play. He was a brilliant writer, mm-hmm. but was killed, unfortunately, in a car accident when he was in his late 30s. So,
did you ever know him?
No, I never did. But I knew, I don't know if I knew his father. His father was general manager of the Stratford Festival. Mm-hmm. And so he grew up in the theater.
Yeah,
grew up
around, he had a bit, a bit of a pedigree.
Yes, exactly. Wonderful sense of language. I mean, we don't get plays written that well, I mean, or that meticulously, at that with that kind of an ear. It's, we say it's somehow, it's a cross between Pinter and Chekhov and Shaw, but mm-hmm. but it's a beautiful play.
Yeah, I know. I saw it when it was done at the Gateway about 10 or 12 years ago.
Right.
That
yep.
was something that really struck me at the time, was just how enjoyable it was to hear the language being yeah. spoken from a Canadian playwright. It was,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. what's the story?
Well, unfortunately, I'm not going to tell you a lot about the story yeah. because I don't want to give spoilers away, mm-hmm. but I can put you into context.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
It's a middle-class family, suburban Toronto, we assume, and the parents have arranged for their two children and the grandchildren. We don't see the grandchildren, but mm-hmm. they're invited for a dinner.
Yeah.
And it's a Sunday night kind of special dinner, and they've arranged for some champagne later. So there's some kind of celebration planned, but the kids don't know what it is, and neither do we as the audience. Mm-hmm. We don't know what's going on. And on the surface, it seems like, you know, it seems like my family. It seems like a pleasant evening. But as the evening goes on, various things keep unraveling, and issues that are normal, really, but are unexpected. And so we're pulled into a world that seems in some ways bizarre, and yet it's totally recognizable as our world.
Mm-hmm. It feels normal, but it's not.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And sometimes I watch them even in the earlier parts of the play, and I think, this is something out of Pinter, or this is a delicate balance by
Albee,
right. Yeah. But no, it's a normal living room.
Yeah.
But it's also a very funny play.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you saw it, I mean, if we bring all that sharp wit
yeah.
to play, it's almost a piece of music. It's
yeah. The two main characters, the mother and the father, have an interesting dynamic too.
They're sweet together.
Yeah.
They're sweet together. They've obviously been together a long time, and together they have to face up to this issue I'm trying to avoid
yeah.
giving away that's going to happen tonight
yeah.
and going to have to be dealt with tonight.
Yeah.
And it's going
but
to
it's
be
sort of, it's mother that's kind of driving it,
yes.
if I remember correctly
yes.
from when I saw it 12 years ago.
Yes, no, you're right about
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. And there's a marvelous kind of sibling tension between the two children,
right,
son and a daughter,
mm-hmm.
and they just rub each other the wrong way, and it sparks and sparks and sparks,
mm-hmm.
and, but there's underneath issues that they didn't know about, or the and then we also have the partner of the son and the husband of the daughter. And so they come into the story as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's a few kind of unsettling issues around them as well that we're not going to talk about.
Exactly. it's strange with this, because, you know, a lot of plays, you know, they you know, the subject's not so secretive.
Yeah.
But I'm sure the first reviewer is going to see it and say, oh, it's a play about so-and-so,
yeah.
and here's the story, and this
yeah.
is what happened.
Yeah.
And, yeah, okay, but...
But I think I don't want to trick you into giving anything away, because I agree with you. I think part of the enjoyment of this play is going in not knowing what to expect.
Exactly.
And
yes.
and
yes.
sort of allowing yourself to be lulled into that feeling of domestic security and
yeah. Yeah.
And finding out for yourself as things go along.
That's right.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
totally. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, marvelous. So let's talk a little bit about the cast.
What a cast.
Yeah.
Anna Hagen, of course, is the artistic director of Western Gold and cast herself in the lead role, but why not? She's
yeah.
going to be wonderful. Howard Siegel is playing the husband, and he's got a beautiful sense of the humor of the character, the presence of the character. He's just going to be delightful.
Mm-hmm.
Then Mia Ingmarsson is going to be spectacular as Norris, the daughter,
mm-hmm.
and Jordan Navratil is the son,
right.
and I've worked with him. This is the third play we've done together, and then Chris Walters is the husband, and this is at least the third play I've done with him, too.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I remember he played yeah. Henry VIII for you.
Played Henry VIII,
yeah.
and then he was in Inspector Calls, which we did mm-hmm. last year as well, and in the movie I did as well. So
yeah.
yeah.
Good. So you've
yeah.
got people you know.
Yeah, it's a lovely cast,
mm-hmm.
and they're lovely with each other, which
yeah.
is fun. They're really having a good time together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, let's actually. Yeah. That was something else I wanted to ask you about, was some of the unique challenges that this play presents, because it is very talkative, it is very wordy, and there's not a lot of action. And presenting that for an audience and keep the audience engaged can sometimes be a challenge.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is, again, as I say, it's partly so we want them to see everything
yeah.
all the time, and we need, as performers, we need to be very articulate, very clear. There are two or three really long speeches, and in that kind of old Shakespearean fashion, if you start a long speech and the audience doesn't know what you were talking about at the beginning of the speech, you're in deep trouble, because
yeah.
it goes on and on and on and on. But if you...
And you get along. What did he say?
Oh, I should have paid more attention to the beginning of that speech. But if you pull them in at the beginning of
yeah.
all that, you know, and so if we're thinking really clearly, the audience will hear it clearly, and they'll be taken up in it.
Yeah. So that's William B. Davis, director of Homeward Bound by Elliot Hayes, and you can see that at the Powell Studio Theater. It opens on Friday, October the 6th,
which is tonight, and runs until the 29th of October. Tickets are available through Brown Paper Tickets, or you can just go to westerngoldtheater.org, and it'll send you the links. And there's a link on the Dave Radio Facebook page, too.
An enabled FM chip in your smartphone can make the difference in an emergency situation by allowing you to still hear critical updates. It will also let you listen to the local FM station using 3 times less battery and 20 times less data than streaming. Visit freeradioonmyphone.ca to see how you can get involved by contacting your carrier and signing our petition.
Hey, what are you doing? You're procrastinating. What are you doing tonight? Netflix? Again? Looking to socialize? We got you. Looking for variety? We have that. Hong Kong Student Association. Your ticket in. We're more than just a club. Come find your home. HKSA. Get involved at www.hksaubc.com.
We are the UBC Musical Theater Troupe. We aim to provide the joys of musical theater to everyone on campus.
Whether it be by participating in our productions, joining our band, or working backstage, we welcome all levels of experience.
Check us out on Facebook for more information.
525,600 minutes. Looking to get a reliable and affordable used bike? Come to the Bike Kitchen, UBC's full-service community bike shop, located on East Mall between Brock Hall and Irving K. Barber. If you buy a bike from us, bring it back to us when you're done, and we'll give you half of your money back, as long as you took good care of it. If it needs repairs, we'll split the cost with you. Yeah, you heard me right. We'll give you crisp dollar bills for half the original price of any used bike that you buy from us, minus the cost of repairs. For more information about our buyback policy, find us online at thebikekitchen.com.
CITR 101.9 FM, Dave Radio with Radio Dave on the radio, and the Vancouver International Film Festival is going on right now at various locations around the city, and we were very privileged to have a couple of directors come and visit us earlier today and talk about their work and their film and their lives and what's important to them and all that kind of stuff. The first person we're going to hear from is, I would say, a national treasure. She's a member of the Order of Canada. She has been making documentary films highlighting the lives of Canada's First Nations people for 50 years. Her 50th film is called Our People Will Be Healed, and it's going to be running, well, I'll give you the details after, here we go, Monday, October 9th at the Cinematheque, which is on Howe Street in Vancouver. So you can get more information by going to viff.org. But first, let's take a listen to Alanis.
My name is Alanis Obomsawin. Mm-hmm. I am a Wambanaki woman from a community called Odanak. It's a reservation in the province of Quebec.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a filmmaker. I work at the National Film Board of Canada.
Yeah. And you've been making films for 50 years now.
50 years, yes.
Yeah. So let's start at the beginning. When did you decide that you wanted to be a filmmaker?
I never decided. Mm-hmm. The film board came to get me, really, from what I was doing previously. I was singing and talking about history in the classroom across the country.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 60s, I was doing a campaign to build a swimming pool on my reserve. And CBC made a film about it. And it appeared on a program at the time called Telescope on prime time. And some people at the film board saw it and invited me to go to the board to meet the directors and producers. That's how it started.
Mm-hmm.
And
so they saw something in you that said
so. And I got my first contract in 1967.
And what was that film?
This was to be a consultant, and I immediately saw that I didn't want to do that. I felt I was very worried because I sort of took them to this community, and then I began to worry, if the people don't like the film, they'll say it's Alanis who took them here. Mm-hmm. And I was very concerned about that. So I told them, don't ask me to do this again.
Yeah.
And eventually I got my own contract to do educational kits. And I was very excited about that, because it was aimed for the teachers to teach about a nation and the voice of the people.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that was the main important thing. It's the best decision I've ever made.
Yeah.
Really.
And you've been telling those stories.
Yes.
Ever since.
That's my 50th film now.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, let's talk about your 50th film then.
Yes.
What's it called?
It's called Our People Will Be Healed. And it's done in a community in northern Manitoba called Norway House. And it's about the people themselves, but mainly the students, the children, and their school, which is just so special.
Mm-hmm. And what makes it special?
I think the leadership mm-hmm. of the community, who have an incredible mind, I would say. And first of all, the school, the building itself is 10 years old. It's a very beautiful building, and it's got tradition and culture in it, just in its shape and what it looks like and the lighting, and it's just beautiful. And it's from kindergarten to grade 12. So I've been going there, I think, about five times, different times, since 2010. Mm-hmm. And I've just been enchanted with the students, their place, and what's there for them. And the generosity and the love that's in that place is just incredible.
Really. I'm really intrigued by, especially by the title, because looking at your body of work, it tells a lot of very sad stories.
Yes.
And about pain and suffering and, yeah. and injustice and struggle. And there's always I haven't seen them all. I've only seen one or two, but there was always in the two that I did see, there was always a message of hope and promise at the end. But the story itself was quite tragic. And so now this story seems to be a lot happier, a lot more optimistic.
Yes. It's even more than that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so touched by the fact that I have witnessed this way of educating, which has not happened before.
Mm-hmm.
I think the main problem for so many years was the books that were written about the history of Canada and used in the classroom as official teaching books. And they obviously were written by brothers of the church and represented the church. And they were the most racist, awful books that was really created to make people hate our people.
Mm-hmm.
It's as plain as that. There's no better way to explain what they had. They designed. So for me to see what I have witnessed these last few years, it's a gift. Like I just, it tells you the possibilities, and it's a model for not just Indigenous people, but for all schools.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of threatening students, for instance, if they're late or. They've created a service to make the students want to be in school. And they even have a system, like the principal says that. She says, until grade 9, you have good presence in the classroom. But after that, she says, we had problems. The kids were missing school. And from grade 12, we were lucky if we had 15, 20 students that would graduate. So we realized that there was a serious problem here. And she said it really has to do that the young teenagers don't want to get up in the morning.
Yeah.
So they created a new system that there would be a later bus for the older kids and to get them at 9, 9:30, and that made all the change. Last year they had either 60 or 70 students that graduated from grade 12. And it's also the love that you feel in the classroom from the part of the teachers and the from the leadership. It's a total different spirit, and you know, when you feel included in everything. They even have children that have special needs, mm-hmm. who are in the same classroom as the rest of the children. And she explains, she says, and there's no bullying here anywhere. It's the contrary. The young children learn that it's to help those who need help. And you have that feeling in words and in their gesture. So it's quite special.
Marvelous.
Yes.
Oh, congratulations. I hope it is received very well.
Yes.
Because it sounds like a beautiful beautiful story to tell.
Yeah. So far it's been really wonderful. It was premiered at TIFF.
Yeah.
In the master section, and it's just been a gift.
Wonderful.
Really.
So what's your 51st film going to be?
It's going to be also in Norway House, but about a Jordan Anderson. I don't know if you ever heard of him. There was a movement to this is a baby who was born in the hospital and with very serious problems physically and mentally, and he remained in a hospital all his life for 5 years and then passed away. Mm-hmm. But when he was 2 years old, the doctors had said that he could go home now with special equipment. And so it was very exciting to see that he would finally leave the hospital. But there was a big problem between the provincial and federal government as to who's going to pay for the expense. And it dragged on, and they said he would remain in the hospital until it's solved. It went on for 3 years, and then Jordan passed away.
Oh.
So there was a bill passed in the House of Commons to make sure that this doesn't happen again. Mm-hmm. And that any child who were in that kind of need should get help services at the very beginning when it's found out, and then let the government fight themselves to know who is going to pay.
Yeah.
They passed that bill, but it's not totally, how do you say,
that
created, like
implemented.
Implemented,
yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. But some in Alberta, they've made a statement that any child who needs that kind of help is going to get that help, and then they'll see about collecting from the government, which is maybe that's the kind of decision people have to make. I don't know. Mm.
Slow steps.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Alanis, I'm honored that you came to talk to us today. Thank you very much. It was.
But, you know, there's one thing I want to say that I'm very impressed with. Is the changes that is happening all across the country in terms of curriculum that is being written. They are really doing their best to include history and languages of Indigenous people, and I get a lot of calls to come and be interviewed and talk about what the needs are. And there's an ear that I never saw before on the part of the Canadians. And I think it comes from education, that now they're much more informed about what the true story is. And I think Canadians want to see justice.
And we want to see justice, and we want to know more.
Yes.
I think that's important, too. There's a real energy and a real need to find out what we have not been told.
Yes. And it's very rich.
Yeah.
It's wonderful to have all these different nations that have so much to offer.
Mm-hmm.
And all these beautiful languages that we still have, not to lose them, not to continue losing them. So I feel very wonderful about that. And I want to thank all the Canadians for this. And also to the fact that we have these institutions that are supported by the Canadians, like the National Film Board, who can help all nations to have their voice heard.
The film is called Our People Will Be Healed. It shows at the Cinematheque on Howe Street Monday night, October 9th at 6:30 p.m. And you can get tickets and more information at viff.org. And if you want to see other works by Alanis Obobsawin, you can go to the National Film Board website. Or if you have Optik TV, there is an NFB app that has some of her films available as well. So definitely well worth checking out. We have another filmmaker that we're going to hear from, Charles Officer, and we're going to hear from him in just a minute.
Vancouver International Film Festival is back this fall from September 28th to October 13th. Experience some of the best cinema from around the world fused with related creator talks and events at one of North America's largest film festivals. With more than 300 films from 73 countries, VIFF's program includes the pick of top international film festivals as well as many undiscovered gems from around Canada and the world. This year, be sure to catch CITR's sponsored film, Tattoos, a poignant coming-of-age romance between two punk music connoisseurs, screening September 30th and October 1st. For more information and tickets, visit viff.org.
And we had another visit from a filmmaker this morning, and another film that's part of the True North series at this year's Vancouver International Film Festival. The film is called Unarmed Verses, and the filmmaker is Charles Officer.
I'm Charles Officer. I'm a citizen of this country. Yeah. Born and raised in Toronto, and I make films, and I'm excited to be here to present Unarmed Verses at VIFF.
Yeah.
I've been here... two other films have played at this festival of mine, and it's awesome to come to the West Coast to know that, you know, I'm telling a Toronto story, but it's relevant to specifically, I think, to, you know, Vancouver as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, the housing sort of situation, and I'm really grateful to mm-hmm. be here. Yeah.
Well, tell us a little bit about what the film's about, who the people are, and what their story is.
Yeah. So this film, it focuses on a community in Toronto, on the northern side, Toronto community housing community, I really focus on telling the story through the voice and eyes and experiences of a 12-year-old girl named Francine Valentine, mm-hmm. who's been, you know, emigrated to Canada when she was 4 years old, and with her family, and found herself in this community, and through it, it's she's a shy young girl who basically really is quite profound. But it took a. But she's so quiet, and people don't know her that she has these thoughts. And spending this time in this community before I started filming, I spent about a year and a half, like with these youth and getting to know their families and building the trust. And within that time, but very early on in that time, I realized that this young girl was the voice of something very special, the kind of young girl who gets missed. Also because she's quiet,
yeah,
and she's intimidated to express herself, so she doesn't speak up. But when I would talk with her, and I had to lean in closer to get her to repeat what she said, because number one, I couldn't hear, then number two, I couldn't believe what she was saying. Then I was like, this is the character. And when we started filming, and Leah Marin, the producer, and Anita Lee, our executive producer, they immediately saw in the footage that she just popped out so much. So she really became that central character. But when I landed in this
camera, loved her, as they say.
Yeah, the camera did love her, and she has this sort of amazing quality that you know, even actors, professional actors, like have to train to find, of that public solitude. You know, once we build certain levels of trust, like the camera was so close to her and she didn't even acknowledge it. Mm-hmm. She was just in her element. And and one thing, you know, when I landed there, I didn't know this about the community, but it was undergoing a revitalization. So there was a...
Which is a fancy word for...
Gentrification.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And however we want to disguise it and label it, the fact of the matter is that there's property and land that people exist on, such as even our native people have, that outsiders come to and see the value of that place and have to get you off the land and do something with it.
Yeah.
And it's happened in Halifax and Africville, like in the 60s. It's happened here.
It happened
here.
Holmes Alley.
Exactly. Yeah. And I understand the idea of rejuvenating areas. I understand the value of that. But there's also this sort of space where we see it all the time, Williamsburg in New York City. It's like these poor or areas that aren't even on the radar. Mm-hmm. And then it clicks in of like, okay, let's go in there because, you know, there is value here. And then they build it up. And then all the people are moved away. But no one really asks, like, where do the people go?
Yeah.
Where do they go? And that was a big concern for me. And through the process of this film, you see, you know, a lot of confusion. You see how, people of color, people of a lower income status are treated when they are considered citizens of the city.
Yeah.
They're not really consulted. They're not included in conversations. And then, especially in Toronto, we have a motto that's...
Well, we don't need to consult them. This is for their own good.
Well, that's it.
Yeah.
That's it. And we see this problem all the way through, from the highest echelons of politics to the to municipal council politics, yeah. that people are making decisions in these rooms for people, and they've never actually been in their homes. They've never had conversations with them. And yes, you know, well-intended to make things better, but for who? Yeah. Really, for who? And Francine poses that question at the top of the film. She's aware at 12 years old that this revitalization isn't for us.
Yeah.
And so if a young girl can kind of call that out, then what is it saying to our educated, you know, adults,
yeah,
who are making these decisions? And it was very, very clear for me to see, without actually taking jabs at Toronto Community Housing or a counselor or whatever, that they just presented who they were, and I just show them. I just show it.
Yeah.
And really kind of show that this young girl is striving amidst all this chaos that's happening around her, all this uncertainty of where she's going to live the next year, where she's going to... You move kids out of neighborhoods and stuff, and families, I mean, their jobs are affected, school and education's affected, where they buy their food is affected, how they where they have access to transportation is affected. It's very tricky when you are moved in from, especially for the young boys, the safety. When the young boys are being moved into these communities, other communities that are also low-income communities, it's territorial.
Yeah.
And there's no buffering or checking up on them after they've moved. One of the young boys in my film, he had to come and live with me for a few months because it wasn't really safe where he was living. And so with the money that we won at Hot Docs for the best film at the festival, I've started a scholarship, started an award for these youth. And so it is not just for them to... I've realized as well as I've gotten older that youth at a certain age, you know, 19, 20, 21, they need support. They need support to actually pay some rent for a year so they can focus on something. They need a little bit of support so they can, like, you know, apply to a school that they want to go to and not have to feel like they have to pay the government back and get into this debt. So I'm trying to build this sort of thing to kickstart, as you know, Francine's 14 now, so she has a few years until she can access this.
Yeah.
So everyone can only access this once you've graduated from high school. And there's a few youth that are ready to capitalize on that right now. But I have them, you know, Kamal and LJ are the older boys in the community. They're 20, 21. And
they have interesting stories, too.
They have great stories.
Yeah.
They have incredible stories. And, you know, right now, you know, LaVon, LJ, the poet, he's actually writing his first book now.
Mm-hmm.
So helping them to get that together, you know. Kamal's making his first record. He's put together now a massive, amazing proposal where I'm helping him to understand how to apply to the Canada Council to get financing, how to set up a schedule of how you really are going to execute your album and find the recording studio. And
yeah.
So it's without that sort of guidance and help, you know, these youth, they do run the